"Oh, to you, child," she whispered, as though afraid of my answer. I found my voice. "You made me obedient. Now you know how it is." "I do, child." She touched my cheek, and my heart rose. "But I can't help you. I renounced big magic." "Oh, lady," I pleaded, "it would be a wondrous gift. I would be so grateful."
"Ella," Mandy warned.
"Mandy, don't you think, just this once..."
Lucinda shook her head, and wispy gray curls fluttered.
"No, I mustn't. But if you ever have need of small magic, call on me. You have only to say the words, 'Lucinda, come to my aid.'" She kissed my forehead. "I remember you now. I thought you only spoke Iorthean."
I begged her. I told her about my circumstances. I wept. She wept with me, sobbed harder than I did, but stood firm. I pleaded with Mandy to persuade her, but Mandy refused.
"I can't, lady," she said. "It was big magic to cast the spell in the first place, but it would be big magic to undo it, too. Who can guess what would come of it?"
"Only good would come of it. Only good!"
"I can't bear this," Lucinda wailed, wringing her hands dramatically. "I can't bear your distress. Farewell, child." She vanished.
I stormed out of Mandy's room and rushed to the library, where I could be alone, where no one was likely to make me scour anything or sew anything or say anything. Now I couldn't go to the balls. Hattie and Olive would go with Mom Olga. They'd be free to dance with Char, and so would every other young lady in Frel. And some lass would win him over. His nature was loving, and he'd find someone to love. As for me, I'd be lucky to glimpse him on the street. He wouldn't recognize me. My dirty servant's garb would rule out identification at a distance, and he'd never be close enough to see my face. I could neither go to the balls nor escape from them. Hattie and Mom Olga talked of nothing else. Even Olive was interested to the extent of worrying about her gown.
"Sew it with gold thread," she instructed her maid. "Shouldn't I be as fine as Hattie?"
Shouldn't I be as fine as both of them? I cooked and scrubbed and waited on them in a fury. For 2 weeks I wouldn't speak to Mandy. The only sounds in the kitchen came from pots and pans as I slammed them down. Then it came to me. Why couldn't I go? Char needn't know I was there. Everyone would be masked, at the beginning at least, although most would unmask quickly so he could admire their beauty. I never would. I'd see him, but he wouldn't see me. Where was the harm if he didn't recognize me? I decided to do it. I would fill my eyes with him. If I could approach him safely, I'd fill my ears. If anyone questioned me, I wouldn't be Ella. I'd invent a new name. I'd be content in his presence, nothing more. I'd have to be careful of Hattie and Olive and Mom Olga. They probably wouldn't recognize me in a mask and an elegant gown, but I'd do well to keep away from them, especially from Hattie. I made up with Mandy and told her my plan. She didn't comment on the risk I'd be taking, only asked,
"Sweet, why go and break your heart again?"
My heart was still broken. I would see Char, and it would mend. I'd leave him, and it would break again. There were 3 balls. It would break 3 times. I had grown tall enough to wear Mother's gowns. Mandy chose the best 3 and altered them in keeping with the current fashion, even adding a graceful train that would follow me everywhere. "Small magic," she said. She also found the mask I'd worn at Father's wedding, white with tiny white beads along its edges. In the days preceding the ball, if there were moments when Char and the balls weren't in my mind, they were when I was asleep. Awake, I'd picture myself, radiantly beautiful, mounting the palace steps. I'd be late and the whole court would be there already. An old servant would mutter,
"At last, a damsel worthy of our prince."
People would turn to stare, and a sigh of envy or appreciation would wrestle through the assembly. Char would hurry to... I wouldn't allow him to see me. The old servant might approve me, but... but I would slip in unnoticed by anyone else. Within, noblemen in my proximity would beg me to dance. I'd oblige them, and the steps would carry me near Char. He'd see me and wonder who I was. After the dance, he'd attempt to find me, but I'd elude him. The next time he'd see me, I'd be in the arms of another partner. I'd smile at the stranger, and Char's heart would be touched. He'd... My thoughts were nonsense. I would see Char and be invisible to him. Perhaps I'd see him fall in love with another maiden. At night, I searched my magic book for illustrations of Char or anything written by him. But the book fell open to pages written in Ayorthian, written by Irida in her diary. I read eagerly. She wrote, "The inn has never had such important guests before. Prince Charmin and his knight stayed here last night. Mother was so nervous, she backed into the trestle table while curtsying. It went over, and Aunt Ineppi's vase smashed into 100 pieces. Mother, Father, I, Olo, Uflimu, Isti, and even a time, went down on our knees, picking up shards so the prince wouldn't step on something sharp. It was so crowded on the floor, I bumped into someone's shoulder. When I turned to apologize, I was face to face with the prince, who was crawling about with the rest of us. He insisted on paying for the vase. He said it never would have happened if not for him. Then he apologized for knocking into me. I couldn't answer him. No words would come. I could only nod and smile and hope I didn't seem too much of a bumpkin. At dinner, when I brought his ale, I did manage to speak, perhaps because I truly had a question, not simply a wish to impress. I told him I'd been at finishing school when Ella ran away, and I asked if he knew whether she was safe. When I said her name, one of the knights called out,
"The ogre tamer! Whatever happened to her?"
The prince was quiet for so long after my question that I worried I'd offended him, but when he spoke, he didn't seem angry.
"You were her friend?" he asked. "You liked her?"
I told him Ella was the best friend I ever had. He paused again, and I feared he would say she had died. But he finally answered that he believed her to be well and married to a rich gentleman. He added,
"She's happy, I think. She is rich, so she is happy."
Without thinking, I blurted, "Ella doesn't care about riches." Then I realized I'd contradicted a prince.
"How do you know?" he said.
I answered, "At school, everyone hated me because I wasn't wealthy and because I spoke with an accent. She was the only one who was kind."
"Perhaps she's changed," he said.
"I don't think so, Your Highness." I contradicted him twice. That was the end of our conversation, and I shall remember it forever. I watched him all evening before and after we talked. Before, he had talked and joked with his men. After, he spoke no more.
Married! How could it be? I wish I could see her again.
I wished I could see Irida. I wished I could have seen Char's face when she defended me. But no illustrations accompanied her journal. December 12th, the day of the first ball, dawned clear and mild, but by noon clouds had gathered and the wind had become sharp and cold. My gowns hung in Mandy's wardrobe. The glass slippers Char and I had found were safely buried at the bottom of my carpet bag. Since they'd be hidden under my petticoats, there was little likelihood that Char would see and identify them. Hattie's preparations began after breakfast and continued endlessly.
"It's not tight enough, Ella. Pull harder."
"Will that do?" My fingers were striped red and white from tugging at her laces. If she could still breathe, I wasn't to blame.
"Let me see."
She curtsied at herself in the mirror and rose, panting and smiling.
"I shall be desolate if you don't remember me, Prince," she cooed at her reflection. Then she spoke over her shoulder. "Am I not magnificent, Ella? Don't you wish you could look as I do and go to the ball?"
"Magnificent, ravishing. Yes, I wish I could." Anything to make her go.
"Pearls would set my hair off to advantage. Fetch them. There's a good girl."
2 hours later, After Mum Olga called her 3 times and threatened to leave without her, she declared herself perfect and departed. At last, I was free to bathe and dress. Instead of the kitchen soap I usually used, I helped myself to Hattie's store of bath oils and fragrant soaps. Mandy produced a fleecy towel and a fine scrub brush.
"Tonight, I'll be your lady-in-waiting," she said, pouring steaming water into the tub.
"When your servant is your fairy godmother, you're never scalded, and your water never gets cold. You become sparkling clean, but the water never gets dirty." I soaked away a year of cinders and grime, and Mom Olga's orders, and Hattie's edicts, and Olive's demands. When I rose from the bath and stepped into the robe Mandy held for me, I was no longer a scullery maid, but the equal of anyone at Char's ball. My gown was a spring green, embroidered with leaves of darker green, and plump yellow buds. Mandy had done her work well. In accordance with the latest fashion, my waist tapered to a narrow point, and my train trailed 2 feet behind me. In the glass, I saw Mandy curtsy.
"You're lovely, lady."
She seemed close to tears. I hugged her. She squeezed me tight, and I inhaled the sweet smell of freshly baked bread. I turned back to the glass and raised my mask, which covered most of my forehead and half of my cheeks, with small holes for my eyes. With half my head hidden, my mouth appeared strange and unknown even to me. The transformation was thorough. With the mask, I was not Ella. Nor was I perfectly dressed. I had no jewels. My throat was unfashionably bare. But it would have to do. I didn't have to be the most elegant creature at the ball. I only had to see Char. When I ran down to our front door, I discovered that icy rain was falling in sheets. If I walked the quarter mile to the castle, I would be soaked. I could go to the ball without jewels, but not wet through and shivering. "Mandy, what can I do?"
"Oh, sweet, you can stay home."
I knew there would be 2 more balls, and that it probably wouldn't sleep tomorrow. But it might, and I had set my heart on going tonight. Isn't there some small magic, a fairy umbrella, something, that would keep me dry?
"No, love, not small magic."
The weather was such a stupid thing to separate me from Char. Mandy hadn't made the rain, but she could have ended it. I wish you were a real fairy, one who wasn't afraid to do anything. I had a mad idea, and acted on it without considering its wisdom. I said the words Lucinda had taught me. "Lucinda, come to my aid." If anyone would think keeping me dry wasn't big magic, that one would be Lucinda.
"Ella," Mandy protested, "don't."
The order came too late. Lucinda appeared between us. She still looked old, but she stood straighter than the last time I'd seen her, and many of her wrinkles had disappeared.
"Ah, sweet child, you need my help," she smiled, and the young Lucinda shone through. "So long as it's not too big, I shall do what I can," I explained. "Going to a ball? Like that? No, it won't do."
She touched my neck, and it was hung so heavy with jewels that it took all my finishing school training to keep my head up. Mandy snorted.
"Perhaps it's too much for small magic," Lucinda agreed.
The weight vanished, replaced by a thin silver chain from which hung a white lily made of the same kind of glass as my slippers. I felt a slight pressure on my head and lifted off a tiara fashioned as a garland of the same flowers. "It's beautiful." Lucinda replaced it on my hair.
"Now you need a coach. That shouldn't be too troublesome."
"How can you call a coach small magic?" Mandy demanded. "And horses, and a coachman and footmen, people and animals. You've forgotten your lesson."
"No, I haven't. I won't shape them from the air. I'll form them out of real things. That should satisfy your scruples, Mandy dear."
Mandy grunted, which I knew was not agreement, but Lucinda continued gaily.
"Earlier this evening in Frel, I spied a giant's cart filled with pumpkins. An orange coach will be splendid."
A rumbling noise reached us. Outside, a mass, darker than the storm, took shape and grew larger. A 7-foot-high pumpkin rolled toward us and came to rest in the street outside the manor. I watched Lucinda. She muttered no incantations, waved no wand. For a moment, her gaze shifted, and she seemed to stare within, not out. Then she winked at me.
"Look, child!"
The pumpkin had been transformed into a gleaming coach with brass door handles and windows through which lacy curtains peeked.
"Mice will make plump horses," she said.
6 fat brown mice raced across the tiles of the hall. They vanished, and 6 horses appeared before the coach. A white rat became the coachman, and 6 lizards were transformed into footmen.
"They're wonderful," I said. "Thank you."
She beamed. Mandy glowered.
"Anything can happen, you idiot."
"What can happen?"
"I'll make it safer. Ella, child, you'll have to leave the ball early. At midnight, your coach will become a pumpkin again, and the animals will regain their original shape until your next ball. The tiara and necklace will disappear."
I would have only 3 hours with Char. They would have to be enough.
"Ah, how glorious to be young and going to a ball."
Lucinda vanished. "Glorious, yes, to see Char, nothing more."
"Goodbye, Mandy," I said.
"Wait!"
She ran to the kitchen. I stood impatiently and gazed outside. As I watched, an orange carpet unfurled itself and rolled from the coach's door to ours. If I waited much longer, it would be wet and useless. Mandy returned with her umbrella, uncompromisingly black and with 2 bent spokes.
"Here, love. I hope you won't be sorry. I won't hug you unless you're dressed."
She kissed me.
"Go now."
I stepped onto the carpet and raised the umbrella. The coachman jumped down from his perch and opened the carriage door. Chapter 27. A few guests were still arriving when my carriage reached the castle. Before I emerged, I made certain my mask was securely tied. I had been here before, as a week-old infant brought to meet my sovereign, but not since. The hall was twice as tall as Mom Olga's. Every wall was covered with tapestries, hunting scenes, court scenes, pastoral scenes. Along the walls, to my right and to my left, a line of marble pillars marched to the end of the hall. I tried not to gape. Soon, I'd be counting windows.
"Mistress,"
a young squire offered me a glass of wine. It was delightful not to be a servant.
"The prince is greeting his guests. There is the queue."
He waved at a file of courtiers, mostly women, that wound from the huge double doors to the prince, a small figure at the far reach of the hall. Most of the women had already unmasked, so Char would be sure to see their lovely eyes or classical noses. The squire added,
"They're each scheming to make the prince propose marriage on the spot."
He bowed.
"Dance with me, lady. The line will wait."
An order. A group of musicians played near the prince, and perhaps a dozen guests danced.
"With pleasure,"
I said, pitching my voice a tone lower than usual. My eyes kept straying for my partner. Char smiled at each guest, bowed, nodded, spoke. Once he laughed. Making him laugh had been my domain. The damsel who caused the laughter was of middle height, slender, with blonde wavy hair cascading to her waist. She had removed her mask, but her back was turned, so I couldn't see her face. Hattie and Olive and Mom Olga weren't in line. They were probably off eating somewhere, but Hattie would certainly return soon. She wouldn't leave a room for long while Char occupied it. My dance ended as the clock struck the 10:15.
"Thank you,"
I said.
"No squire can hold the lady's attention tonight,"
he left me. Just over 2 hours remained. I retired to a chair at the end of the hall, as close to Char as I dared. 3 gentlemen asked me to dance, but I declined each invitation. I became simply a pair of eyes, staring through my mask at Char. I needed no ears because I was too far off to hear his voice, no words because I was too distant for speech, and no thoughts. Those I saved for later. He bent his head. I loved the hairs on the nape of his neck. He moved his lips. I admired their changing shape. He clasped a hand. I blessed his fingers. Once, the power of my gaze drew his eyes. I looked away quickly and noticed Hattie hovering a few feet beyond the line, her lips clenched in a fawning smile. He spoke to the last guest, last but one. My resolution to be unseen gave way. The last in line would be me. I rose and hurried to reach him before Hattie could pounce. I curtsied, he bowed. When we both straightened, I found I had grown closer to his height.
"What is your name, lady?"
He smiled politely. I found my voice with difficulty. "Leela." We were silent.
"Do you live here in Frel, Lady Leela?"
"In Bast, Highness." I named a town near the Elves' Forest. He looked past me, ready to move on.
"I hope you enjoy the ball and your stay in Frel."
I couldn't let him go.
"Abensa ahudo. Iseni imi eseti erubu amalfa."
I spoke with a heavy Kyrian accent.
"You speak Iorthian."
His attention was captured. "Not well. My uncle was born there. He's a singer. His voice can charm wood." Shar's smile was genuine now.
"I miss their songs. I was glad to leave, but now I miss everything."
I hummed a stanza of Arita's favorite song, a sad one about a farmer whose family is starving. Shar joined me, singing softly. Near us, heads turned. I saw Hattie frown, with her smile still frozen in place. When we finished, he bowed again.
"Would you favor me with a dance?"
Over all the others, I was his choice. I curtsied, and he took my hand. Our hands knew each other. Shar looked at me, startled.
"Have we met before, lady?"
"I've never left Bast, but I've longed to see Frel my whole life." He nodded. The clock struck 11. The dance was a gavotte, too spirited for talk. Rapid movement was a relief in the midst of so much feeling. We flew through the hall, perfectly in step. Shar smiled at me. I smiled back, happy. We separated. I twined arms with a succession of momentary partners. Dukes, earls, knights, squires, and back to Shar. A final whirl, and the dance ended. "I love a gavotte," I said, touching to make sure my mask was still properly in place. The rush, the sweep, the whoosh. What nonsense was I talking?
"It's the same with stair rails, the same feeling," he said. "Do you like to slide?"
His voice was eager. "Stair rails? Did he suspect me?" I forced a sigh. "No, Majesty, I'm terrified of heights."
"Oh."
His polite tone had returned. "Do you?"
"Do I what?"
"Like to slide down stair rails?"
"Oh, yes. I used to."
"I wish I could enjoy it. This fear of heights is an affliction." He nodded, a show of sympathy, but not much interest. I was losing him. "Especially," I added, "as I've grown taller." He stared. Then he laughed in surprised delight. I was a fool for behaving so much like myself. The clock struck the half hour. Shar started.
"Half after 11? I've neglected my guests."
He became the courteous host again.
"Refreshments are in the next room if you care to partake of them."
He waved at an archway. Then,
"I'll look for you later."
He hoped to see me again. Leela, that is. I hurried out of the hall. Outside, the sleet had stopped. The pumpkin coach glistened in the line of black carriages. I climbed in. When we arrived at home, the coachman handed me out, remounted, and flicked his whip. The horses started off. In the morning, Hattie told me about her share in the ball, bidding me to sit on a low stool while the family ate their breakfast. "He danced with me," Hattie said, her teeth stained purple from a blueberry muffin. "And only good manners prevented him from spending the rest of the evening at my side."
"When will you pay me?" Olive asked.
"Must I pay? Aren't you glad you danced with the prince?"
"You said you'd give me 3 coins for every time he couldn't dance with anyone else because of me. You owe me, she thought, 8 coins.
How many times did he dance with you? I asked.
3 times. I asked him 4 times, but the last time he said he had to see to his other guests.
I vowed not to approach Char during the second ball. It was too dangerous. The evening was clear, but Lucinda provided the coach anyway. My tiara and pendant were pink roses. My gown was a silvery blue with a pale purple petticoat. Tonight there was no receiving line. I searched for a seat where I'd have a clear view of the dance and where others would have a poor view of me. I found one in a recess, partially blocked by a giant fern in a stone pot. I scrutinized Shard's dancing partners, although I knew I had no right to resent a rival. He danced 3 times with the yellow-haired wench who'd made him laugh the night before. She wore no mask and was lovely. I couldn't leave him to her. The clock struck the half hour. Soon it would be 11. I checked my mask, then left my hiding place and stood with the others who observed the dance. Char saw me. Over the shoulder of his partner, he mouthed, "Wait for me." I grew roots. An earthquake could not have moved me. The clock struck 11:15. It struck 11. If it had struck the end of the world, I'd have stayed as I was. The final figure ended, and he came to me.
"Will you dance?" he asked. "I looked for you."
Did I have time? I accepted his arm, and we stepped into the dance, a slow sarabande. I was here all the while. I watched you.
"What did you see?"
An excellent host who had little real enjoyment in the ball, except when he danced with the blonde beauty.
"Was it so apparent?"
It was to me. He changed the subject.
"Will you be here tomorrow? My father has asked me to perform an Eorthian song."
"When will you sing?" "Before midnight, please."
"Sometime late,"
he grinned.
"If I'm lucky, many of my guests will have gone. They needn't all hear their future ruler disgrace himself."
"There will be no disgrace. Not if you were taught in Eortha. What will you sing?"
"A homecoming song,"
he sang in my ear.
"Oak, granite, lilies by the road. Remember me? I remember you. Clouds brushing, clover hills. Remember me? Sister child, grown tall. Remember me? I remember you."
The dance ended and he stopped.
"There's more. I want you to hear it. Will you?"
I resolved to stay late the next night. I'd managed to reach home without Lucinda's gifts, even if I had to swim. "I'll be delighted to, but I must leave now tonight. I'm expected by 12. How close to midnight was it now? He would think it odd if my jewelry vanished.
"Oh, I'd hoped. I'm sorry, I mustn't."
He bowed. I curtsied. "Till tomorrow, Majesty."
"One last thing."
He caught my hand.
"Please, call me Char."
Chapter 28. I rode home, calling myself a dolt, but rejoicing nonetheless. In my room, I opened my magic book to see if it would show me anything about the ball or Char's thoughts. There was nothing. The next morning I tried again and found an entry in his journal from the night before.
"How dare she! That fright, Hattie, rushed at me the instant Leela left. Some wenches will stoop to anything to intrigue a man," she said. "I should be devastated if I had to wear a mask in order to be interesting. She warned me the mask might conceal anything. A deformity, advancing age, the face of a known bandit. If I were sovereign," she said, "I would order her to remove her mask." I wanted to reply, "If you were sovereign, every Kyrian would wish you'd don one. Certainly I've wondered why Leela hides her face, but it may be the custom in Bast. If she is a bandit, she is courageous to come to court. More likely she is disfigured. Maybe she has a scar, or one eyelid droops, or her nose is mottled purple. I don't care. I'm pleased to have found a friend at these balls, where I expected to find only tedium."
"Does Leela want more than friendship? Why did I write that name?
Did she come to these balls as every other maiden did, hoping to wed a prince? No matter what I'm like, so long as I'm a prince. I confess, I do wish to see her face.
I turned the page and found a reckoning from Olive to Hattie.
You owe me 6 KJs. I danced with him 2 times when you were eating. Pay me.
In the afternoon, I slipped out of the manor to the greenhouse near the menagerie. There I picked daisies and wove the flowers into a garland to replace Lucinda's tiara. If I was to stay at the ball after midnight, I couldn't wear Lucinda's jewels. My gown for the last ball was my favorite, white, with a low neckline edged in lace. The skirt parted in front to reveal a petticoat with 3 lace flounces. In back, my skirt was tied with a large bow that flowed into the graceful sweep of my train. I faced myself in the mirror and began to set the garland in my hair, but Mandy stopped me.
Here's something better, love.
She handed me 2 packages wrapped in tissue paper.
Open them.
They were a tiara of woven silver leaves and a silver chain on which hung an aster made of lapis.
Oh, Mandy! I bought them at the market. They won't disappear at midnight.
She placed the tiara on my hair and fastened the chain around my neck.
You make them beautiful, sweet.
I looked in the mirror. Mandy's selections added something that Lucinda's creations hadn't. Just right for my gown and just right for me. Char was waiting for me at the palace entrance. When the carriage drove up, he dashed to help me out before the coachman could step down. The clock struck 8:30, the beginning of the last ball.
You look splendid, he said, bowing.
I was touched by his gallantry, since he believed me disfigured. As we went inside, he said,
Your carriage is an unusual color.
Not in Bast.
If he knew much about Bast, I was in for trouble, unless orange coaches were common there.
He took my arm.
May I visit you there?
Bast would be honored.
And you?
I'd be honored, too.
If I'm going to visit your family, you should meet mine.
I'll be delighted, someday.
Now is a good time. They're nearby, you're nearby.
Now? King Gerald? He chuckled.
That's who my father is.
But
he's kind to everyone except ogres. You needn't worry.
The king rose when we entered. I curtsied, blushing for my rudeness in wearing a mask before him. When I rose, he was beaming at Char. Queen Daria was smiling, too. I'd seen them many times, but never so close. The queen had a wide face, perfect for broad smiles, an honest face. Char resembled his father, but softened a bit. The king's face was severe in repose, although merry now.
Mother, father, may I introduce Lady Leela, my new friend and acquaintance from Bast, where the carriages are orange.
Lady Leela!
King Gerald took my hand. He had the roundest, deepest voice I'd ever heard.
Welcome to Frel.
Most welcome. Queen Daria embraced me. I've waited long to meet the maiden my son loves.
I don't love her mother. That is, I like her, certainly.
Over the queen's shoulder, I saw Char looking silly with embarrassment. Queen Daria held me away from her and searched my face.
I can't tell through the mask, but you remind me of a lady I admired. She had the most playful spirit I ever knew.
She added, so only I could hear,
If you are like her, then Char has chosen well.
She released me, and I stepped away, dazed. I was certain she had meant mother.
Lady Leela is proof I haven't been polite and distant to everyone, Char said.
Excellent proof,
King Gerald answered.
Bring along more proof, and we'll be convinced.
He frowned at my mask.
We should return to my guests,
Char said hastily. As we left, I heard Queen Daria say,
I don't remember any orange coaches in Bast.
Back in the hall, Char asked me to save a dance for him later.
Just now I'd better be polite and distant some more.
I didn't want him to go. Every instant of our final evening was too precious to lose even one. But I nodded, and he left me. I watched the dance and turned down partners.
Mistress, Hattie stood before me, simpering. I've wanted to catch you alone, my dear. I am Lady Hattie, daughter of Dame Olga.
Leela had no reason to hate Hattie. I'm happy to meet another Frelin.
Charmant says you live in Bast.
No one called him Charmant. She proceeded to pump me about my family and circumstances, pressing me until I said, I hadn't thought it was the custom here to interrogate visitors.
I apologize, but one has to be so careful when one is connected to royalty. You see, Charmant and I have an understanding. We are secretly engaged.
Had she gone mad to speak such a falsehood?
To protect him, I must ask you to remove your mask. I must see what lies beneath.
Thank heaven she had asked and not ordered.
You may ask, but I shall not oblige. Good evening, Lady Hattie.
I turned and began to walk away.
Leela, there you are.
Char was back.
Now, dance with me, he said. Your prince commands you to. I want to spend the rest of the ball with you.
He bowed to Hattie, standing a few feet away.
Excuse us.
I curtsied, reveling in her fury.
They are all asking about you, he said,
pulling me close as the dance required.
Who is this mysterious stranger, they say.
The maiden who wears a mask.
Why?
He stopped himself and changed subjects, speaking of court affairs. I wondered how many more dances we'd have. The clock chimed 9:30. In a few hours, Leela would be gone forever. I'd never be so close to Char again. Despite a fierce struggle, I began to cry. He might not have seen because of the mask, but a tear coursed down my cheek.
Leela, I am so sorry.
There was so much remorse in his voice that I was startled.
Why? What were you saying? I'm the one to apologize. I wasn't listening.
I was thinking how sad I'll be to leave Frel.
I laughed a little. No more balls every night.
But you can come back, can't you?
I suppose, but it won't be the same. You can never go back to a moment when you were happy.
That's true.
The dance ended.
Would you like to go outside? Every time the musicians start up, I'm reminded of all the maidens with whom I should be dancing.
Outdoors, we strolled through the castle gardens while I kept listening for chimes. How much time had passed? How much was left? Char spoke of Frel, asking whether I'd visited this side or that, and describing each one for me. I must have answered him reasonably when I had to, but if called upon to repeat what I said or what he said, I couldn't. Most of my mind and all of my heart were set on the sound of his voice, the warmth of his arm in mine, the rhythm of our steps together, the fresh scent of the night air, and on the wish that each minute would last a year. I cried again, but in the dark he didn't see, and the clock moved relentlessly on. 10, half after, 11, half after.
That's enough, he said finally. I can face them now.
Inside, we danced again.
Soon it will be time for me to sing. After that, I'll either be surrounded by worshipping music lovers or shunned by all.
Surrounded, I said, and I would never shun you.
I wonder. You may shun me if you know the truth.
He took a breath and was suddenly quite formal.
I apologize if I unintentionally raised your expectations, but I've resolved never to marry.
So the balls hadn't been his idea. I stifled a triumphant laugh. You didn't mislead me. I've only been saving stories for home. I'll tell them. The prince said thus and so to me, and I said thus and so back to him. And mother, I made him laugh. I made our prince laugh. And father, he danced with me, one night with almost no one except me. What did he wear? My sister will want to know. Did he have his sword with him always? Father will ask. Char tightened his hold on my waist.
Marriage is supposed to be forever, but friendship can be forever too.
Will you? I felt something at the back of my head. Hattie, dancing nearby with the Earl of Denby, snatched off my mask. I let go of Char and covered my face with my hands, but not quickly enough.
Chapter 29
Ella! Hattie shrieked. Char gasped.
Ella?
I broke away from him and began to run as the clock struck midnight. Char would have caught me in a moment, but Hattie must have held him somehow. Outside, a huge pumpkin stood uselessly in the line of carriages. I continued to flee. A white rat skittered across my path. Somewhere, I lost one of my slippers. I ran on, listening for pursuers. At home, maybe Mandy would know what to do. Or I'd hide in the cellar, in the stable, somewhere. How could I have gone to the balls to put Char and Kyria in such danger? Mandy! I shouted as soon as I reached the manor. A servant stared at me. I ran into the kitchen. I've endangered Char again. And Kyria, what can I do? Pack your things, Mandy said, as soon as she understood my rushed explanation. Where shall I go? I'll come with you. We'll find work as cooks. Hurry! Can't you pack for us by magic? She'd done it before. It was just small magic. Nothing is small magic in a moment like this. Go! Fairies! I raced my room and began to throw things into my carpet bag. I had little. It would be the work of a minute. I heard the door open downstairs. There were voices. We'd never managed to leave. I tore off my ball gown and donned my tattered servant's wear, rubbing the sooty skirt across my face. Over my hair, I tied a ragged length of linen. Nancy appeared at my door. It's the prince! He wants to see everyone! I didn't move. She giggled nervously. He won't eat us! At least I hope not. Come! I followed her, my heart drumming loud enough to drown out all thought. He stood in the hall with his knights and our entire household. In the midst of all that was more important, I hated him to see me covered in rags and cinders. I stationed myself behind the tallest manservant, but Char and the knights walked among us, straining for a new disguise of servant and simpleton. I sucked on my fist and stared about vacantly. Sir Stefan found me.
"Here's a maid," he said. "Come, lass."
He took my hand and pulled me to Char.
"Ella! Ella, why are you dressed so?"
"Your Majesty, I'm..." I was about to deny my name, but Hattie spoke for me.
"That's only Cinders, the scullery maid," she said. "Sire, would you care for a refreshment now you're here?"
"She's a scullery maid?"
"A scullery maid, of no account. But our cook, Mandy, has cakes fit for a prince."
The door wasn't far. Sir Stefan still held my hand. I pulled, but couldn't break away.
"Lass," Char said to me, "I won't hurt you, no matter what."
He cupped his hand under my chin and tilted my face up to his. I wanted to catch his hand and kiss it. As soon as we touched, I knew he recognized me. He brought my slipper out from his cloak.
"It belonged to Ella, and will fit her alone, whether she is a scullery maid or a duchess."
A chair was brought. I wished for normal-sized feet.
"That's my slipper," Hattie said. "It's been missing for years."
"Your feet are too big," Olive blurted.
"Try it," Char told Hattie. "I lost it because it kept falling off."
She sat and removed her own slipper. I caught the familiar smell of her feet. She couldn't wedge her toes in.
"I'm younger than Hattie," Olive said, "so my feet are smaller. Probably."
They were bigger. Now it was my turn. Char knelt, holding the slipper. I extended my foot, and he guided it. The slipper fit perfectly, of course. What was I going to do? His face was close to mine. He must have seen my terror.
"You needn't be Ella if you don't want to be," he said softly.
He was so good. "I'm not," I said, but in spite of myself, tears streamed down my cheeks. I saw hope spread across his face.
"That letter was rubbish. A trick."
He glared at Hattie, then turned to me, his look probing.
"Do you love me?"
He still spoke softly.
"Tell me."
An order.
"I do." I was sobbing and smiling at once. How was I going to give him up again?
Char was jubilant. His voice rang out.
"Then marry me!"
Another order. I nodded and continued to weep, but my hand found its way into his.
"Don't marry him, Ella," Hattie commanded, giving my name away for once and all.
I withdrew my hand.
I can't, I said. Perhaps Hattie would save us.
Hattie, don't be a fool, Mum Olga snapped. Don't you want to be stepsister to the Queen and make her give you whatever you like? She smiled at me. His Highness is kind enough to want to marry you, Ella, my sweet.
It had begun. The curse would make Hattie and Mum Olga as grand as they wanted to be, and it would provide endless wealth for Olive. Shah was looking at me with such gladness, and I loved him so. I was the cause of his joy, and would be the cause of his destruction. A secret delivered to his enemies, a letter written in my own hand, a covert signal given by me, poison in his glass, a dagger in his ribs, a fall from a parapet.
"Marry me, Ella," he said again, the order a whisper now. "Say you'll marry me."
Anyone else could have said no or yes. This wasn't a royal command. Shah probably had no idea he'd given an order. But I had to obey. Wanted to obey. Hated to harm him. Wanted to marry him. I would destroy my love and my land. They were in danger, and no one could rescue them. We were all doomed, all cursed. Shah was too precious to hurt, too precious to lose, too precious to betray, too precious to marry, too precious to kill, too precious to obey. Words rose in me, filled my mouth, pushed against my lips. "Yes, I'll marry you! Yes, I love you! Yes, yes, yes!" I swallowed, forcing them down, but they tore at my throat. A strangled noise erupted from me. But not words, not consent. He put a hand on my shoulder. I must have frightened him, but I couldn't see his face. My vision had turned inward, where the battle raged. I heard Lucinda's voice.
"My gift to Ella is obedience. She will always be obedient."
I saw Mandy telling me to eat my birthday cake. I saw Seif leering at me and heard him.
No need to be persuasive with this one. It'd cook itself if we told it to.
I saw Olive counting my coins, Mum Olga standing over me while I scrubbed the courtyard, Hattie wearing Mother's necklace. I'd eaten the cake, drunk the tonic, given up the necklace, slaved for my stepmother, let Olive suck me dry. They'd gotten all they wanted of me, but they weren't going to get Shar. Never, never. Be obedient, marry him, say yes, say yes, say yes. The tears streaming from my eyes were acid, burning my cheeks, my mouth filled with liquid, bile and blood from biting my tongue, salty and corrosive and sweet. In spite of myself, my mouth opened. Consent had won, obedience had won. But I clamped my hand over my mouth. My yes was stillborn. I remembered Shah at Mother's funeral, waiting for me while I wept, grieving for Mother, too. I heard his promise at the menagerie. "And soon I shall catch a centaur and give it to you." I saw him binding Seif's ankles. I saw him, buttonless doublet flapping, bow to Father after we'd flown down the stair rails. I saw the ball and King Gerald beaming at his son. The hope and future of Kyria. Say yes and be happy. Say yes and live. Obey, marry him. I began to rock in my chair. Forward, the words were about to come. Back, I reeled them in. Faster and faster, the legs of the chair thudded on the tiles and pounded in my ears. Marry him, I won't. Marry him, I won't. Then I lost sense of all of it. I went on rocking and crying, but my thought burrowed within, concentrated in a point deep in my chest, where there was room for only one truth. I must save Shar. For a moment, I rested inside myself, safe, secure, certain, gaining strength. In that moment, I found a power beyond any I'd had before, a will and a determination I would never have needed if not for Lucinda, a fortitude I hadn't been able to find for a lesser cause. And I found my voice. "No!" I shouted. "I won't marry you. I won't do it. No one can force me." I swallowed and wiped my mouth on my filthy sleeve. I leaped up, ready to defy anyone.
"Who would force you?"
Shar sounded shocked.
"No matter who, I won't. I won't. They can't make me. No one can make me. I won't marry you."
Olive said, "She'll marry you. You told her to. She has to listen." She laughed. "Marry him and give me your money."
"I won't! Stop ordering me to!"
I was still shouting, invigorated. I wanted to march, waving banners. Shar would not die because of me. Shar would live, live and prosper.
"She doesn't have to marry me," he said.
"Hush, Olive," Hattie said. "Ella, go to your room. His Majesty can have no further need of you." Char said, "I have great need of her." "Hush, Hattie," I said, intoxicated with my success. "I don't want to go to my room. Everyone must know I shan't marry the prince." I ran to the door to our street, opened it, and called out into the night, "I shan't marry the prince." I turned back into the hall and ran to Char and threw my arms about his neck. "I shan't marry you." I kissed his cheek. He was safe from me. He turned my head and kissed me on the mouth. The kiss swept through me, and I clung to him, trembling. From behind me, Hattie shrilled, "Go to your room this instant! I command you!" I ignored her, but Char pulled away. "Why won't you marry me? Why not, if you love me?" "I'm cursed! You wouldn't be safe if I were your wife!" What was I saying? I hadn't told anyone about the curse since I was 8. Mother had forbidden it. Had someone told me to? No one had. Then why? My thoughts wouldn't settle. I wasn't going to marry Char, that was certain. He looked so handsome, smiling from our kiss, then frowning in confusion, a smudge of my soot on his nose. I wiped it off. Saving him made him more mine than ever. Could my refusal mean the spell was broken? Could it? I took stock of myself. I did feel different. Larger, fuller, more complete. No longer divided against myself. Compulsion to comply against wish to refuse. Larger, but lighter. Much lighter. A burden shed. A massive burden. I defied Olive's command, as well as Char's, and Hattie had sent me to my room, but I was still here. I had told my secret, but I felt no dizziness, no pain.
"You're free. The curse is over, love."
Mandy was at my side, hugging me. "You rescued yourself when you rescued the prince. I am that proud and glad, sweet. I could shout." I'd been able to break the curse myself. I'd had to have reason enough, love enough to do it, to find the will and the strength. My safety from the ogres hadn't been enough. Zulf's rescue hadn't been enough, especially not with guards about. My slavery to Mum Olga hadn't been enough. Kyria was enough. Char was enough. Now it was over, ended forever. I was made anew. Ella. Just Ella. Not Ella the slave. Not a scullery maid. Not Leela. Not Eleanor. Ella. Myself unto myself. One. Me. I tore off the rag that covered my hair. Then I curtsied to Char. "When you asked me for my hand a few minutes ago, I was still too young to marry." I looked up at him and saw a smile start. "I'm older now. So much older that not only can I marry, but I can beg you to marry me." I knelt and took his hand. He didn't let me kneel before him. He pulled me up and kissed me again. I took that to signify his consent. Epilogue. In a month, we married. For the ceremony, I wore my first new gown in a year and Mother's necklace, which I reclaimed from Hattie. After my deception had been explained to them, King Gerald and Queen Daria welcomed me joyously into the royal family. My stepfamily was not invited to the wedding, and had to celebrate, if they wished, in the streets with the rest of Frel. Father was invited, but he was traveling and didn't receive the invitation until it was too late. Arita did attend. We renewed our friendship and swore to visit each other often, an oath we've kept faithfully. All the exotic peoples, except ogres, were represented at the ceremony. Slannon gave us a new pottery piece by Agulin, an elf child embracing a tree. Zataf and Zulf were there, Zulf still a toddler, since gnomes grow more slowly than humans. Uaxi came too, and was responsible for keeping our animal guest, Apple, from galloping the length of the palace hall. Although we didn't invite Lucinda, she arrived anyway, with a gift. "No need," Char and I chimed together.
"Remember when you were a squirrel," Mandy said.
But the gift was what Father would have called a fairy trifle. It was a box, no larger than my thumbnail, which grew or shrank to accommodate whatever it was called upon to hold. Wonderfully useful, and not harmful at all. We thanked Lucinda enthusiastically until she glowed with pleasure. In time, Hattie became reconciled to our marriage and used her connection to us to her best advantage. She never married, but Olive did. A garrulous widower fell in love with her unwavering attention. When she'd demand that he talk to her, he'd tell her about his triumphs, his enemies, his opinions on everything. She wasn't anxious to wed. In exchange for her consent, he paid her 20 KJs every day and served a white cake with every meal. Father and Mama Olga continued to love at a distance. After my marriage, he became successful again, trading on the respect commanded by the royal family. Shar watched over him and intervened when necessary to save him or his victims from the consequences of his chicanery. Mandy lived with us as cook and godmother of our children, and secret performer of small magic to protect us from colds, broken crockery, and the sundry inconveniences of a royal household. Nancy lived at the palace, too, and commanded a legion of servants, several of whom were in charge of polishing stair rails for their sliding monarchs. I refused to become a princess, but adopted the titles of court linguist and cook's helper. I also refused to stay at home when Char traveled, and learned every language and dialect that came our way. When we left the children behind, my magic book kept us informed of their doings. Decisions were a delight after the curse. I loved having the power to say yes or no, and refusing anything was a special pleasure. My contrariness kept Char laughing, and his goodness kept me in love. And so, with laughter and love, we lived happily ever after. This is Eden Regal. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Ella Enchanted by Gail Carson Levine. This program was produced and directed by Steve Blaine. Production copyright 1998. Phantom Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.